This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this episode, Missy Renshausen will be here to review the Paralympic Games, and we'll hear from Yvonne Bartow, who is the author of Dressage Horse Manifesto. And then we'll have an excerpt from the 2015 USDF Sport Horse Prospect Development Forum featuring Scott Hassler and Willie Arts. But first, we'd like to remind you that the views of the guests and the hosts of the USDF official podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. And we begin with an item of news that the Carlisle Academy, New England's premier integrative riding school, has received a federal grant of $52,100 from the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs Adaptive Sports Program. This grant was awarded in partnership with the United States Equestrian Federation and the Professional Association of Therapeutic Horsemanship International to increase and expand para-equestrian opportunities to disabled veterans and their coaches at the community, regional, and national level. The USEF and the U.S. Para-Equestrian Association recently designated Carlisle Academy as one of three international para-equestrian dressage centers of excellence for fostering growth in para-equestrian dressage. Missy Renshausen joins me now. She was in Rio for the Paralympics with one of her clients and watching all of the American team performances. And she joins us now. Missy, have you got your breath back after the games?
Well, I'm working on it. It was definitely quite a trip, but it is nice to be home again.
Now, you've been working with Paralympians now for a number of years. You've been coach for a few years too. I mean, you have extensive experience of working with the Paralympians. And so you must have had some level of, I guess, expectation of the team's capabilities and performances in Rio. Before we break down each of their performances, Missy, what was your overall impression of the team's performances and what they took away from Rio?
I thought this year we had a lot of team members that have actually been to the WEG or to the games. My student, actually, Margaret McIntosh, this was her first time on a team. But the camaraderie overall between all of them was wonderful this year. They all had a great communication and support amongst all of them. It was a great year.
Now, they got together as a team, didn't they, in Florida before they headed down to Rio. Did the travel and all those plans go as you would hoped and the horses arrived well and ready to perform? How was that for them and the conditions once they got to Rio?
Yes, the trip itself went quite well. We were in Florida, just outside of Ocala, for about 6 days of training. And everyone gathered there and went over all of our packing and travel plans. And then the horses shipped from Ocala down to Miami. And we had a brief quarantine period in Miami for, it was probably about 7 hours, 8 hours. And then flew from Miami directly into Rio. So the flight for the horses was great. They all... the vet from Canada, actually the para vet from Canada, flew with the horses, and she said they all traveled great. The venue in Rio was fabulous. They did a wonderful job for the horses. They had all really nice big stalls that had great ventilation because it was quite hot there. But the facilities itself for the horses was perfect. And they all arrived, a little tired because it was a long journey. And we gave them a couple easy days before we started back working them all.
And the competition began with the grade three. And, of course, that was Annie Peavy and Lancelot Warrior, who was kicked off the competition for us. Talk us through that and how that went, those early team tests.
Yes, Annie did a great job. She went in there and she has a great rapport with this horse. And the two of them, I will say, really work well together. She had a very nice test, very accurate I would say probably what the judges were after were a little, you know, they wanted a little more expression in his gait. He's a very elegant mover, but he's not extravagant. But I was really pleased with her ride, and she definitely, you know, put down a good solid test to start us off.
Yes, I think that was a 68, wasn't it? 68 and change.
Yes.
So that was pretty consistent for him. And so take us through then to the next competition. That was the Grade 1B, wasn't it?
Yes.
That was, I believe that was the same day, wasn't it? The very start of the week.
Yes, they were all kind of back-to-back on different days. Yes, so in the afternoon we had Sydney Collier with Western Rose, and she's just been with that horse, I want to say, probably about less than a year they've been together. But Western Rose went to London with us, and she was a team horse for a 1A rider in London. So the horse is well-traveled and a good competitor. Sid did a good job. If I had to falter, she was just a little bit underpowered. And unfortunately, she went after a very good rider to start the day. So, you know, I think that hit her a little harder than it would have. So the judges, they got her on a 66 and change. And then, you know, I think she had a good game plan, you know, coming out of the ring, working with her trainer. They definitely knew what, you know, the judges wanted the next go around. So it was good for them to have a good plan in place. And then followed, the next day we had, both the 1As and Becca Hart. So Becca Hart's a Grade 2, and she had a good ride. The horse was not as steady as we'd like to see her in the ring, but her walk work was beautiful. And, you know, she does have some very, very, very lovely trot moments. But she just lost her a couple times in the test, but still scored a very good 69.
Just to catch up, Missy, that Annie finished sixth then in her after her first ride, and Sydney was ninth, I believe, in her test.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yep.
And
yes, correct.
Okay, and then we moved on yep, to
Becca Hart.
Becky Hart.
Yeah, she was. So Becca Hart was. She finished fifth the first day.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And then our 1A riders, Margaret McIntosh, who I train, had a nice, lovely, consistent test. It was just a little slow. but she, you know, was very accurate in her movements and just, again, you know, needed a little bit more power. And she, I believe, was on a 68.
And that was the 19th place for her. She has an aptly named horse for the competition. Was that deliberate? Rio Rio.
Rio Rio. When we bought her, we're like, oh boy, this is either going to help us or this isn't. but yeah, she actually came with the name Rio Rio. And we did talk about changing it because we weren't sure if that was how we wanted to go forward. But we hung in there with her name. And she was great. She, you know, the horse is, you know, she's a very good-natured, beautiful black mare, and has a lovely walk. She just, her biggest issue is that she's very laid back, so she likes to be a little slow, and that's usually what gets Margaret in her tests. But I was very pleased with her. You know, she went in, you know, the first time for a big competition like that. And went in and rode a very nice test. And finished 19th. It's, you know, the 1As are a very hard grade. There's some very, very, very good international riders in the 1A. And they had the biggest class of 25 entries. So I was pleased with her. You know, obviously, we would have liked her to be a little higher in the placing, but I think for the test that she rode, she certainly got, you know, a good score with it. And then Roxanne Trunnell, she was the last rider to go, and she had a good test. She was more forward and just kept that horse nice and active, and she finished on a 69, and I believe she was 16th. I think, is that
right? And then we moved
she
on.
She finished about 16th.
Then we moved on to the individual championships tests. Then again, grade 3, 4, 1B, 2, 1A, and they all followed, I think, a day later, didn't they? That was the middle of the competition then before we went on to the freestyle. So let's hear about those performances.
Again, Annie Peavy started us off, and she, you know, took the comments from the judges and went in there and really upped her game in the trot work. And I thought she really actually had some very beautiful trot work. The canter maybe just got a little bit quick, but they, you know, the judges' comments were they wanted to see her forward. So she rode forward. We were a little bit disappointed in her score. I thought she could have scored a little bit higher for her performance. But she still, you know, was right in there in the placings. And again, she unfortunately just finished out of the scores by less than a point to go forward to the freestyle.
Yeah, so that was a 68 and change for her. She finished 8th, I think, in that round.
Yeah. So they took the top 7, but she was just, even with her score, her previous score, she just got nudged out again by less than a point to go forward. So that was a little disappointing for all of us, because we felt that she had a nice performance and certainly should have been there. And then Sydney Collier followed her again with really same things. You know, they went over, they warmed up the horse a little bit differently, and she went in there and rode nice and forward and had good work. And, you know, a couple little bobbles, I think, that the judges really, you know, saw, and therefore for her too, you know, she didn't get quite as high of a score as we thought she would, but, you know, for her little mistakes, that certainly made up for the score. And the same for her. She just finished out of the placings to go forward to the freestyle by less than a point. So, again, her second ride definitely was much improved from her first. And, you know, she went in there and she did a great job, you know, being as young as she is, and rode her little heart out. I was really very impressed with her.
And that was a 67.65, and she finished 7th then on Western Roses.
Yep. And that just dropped her, you know, again, right out of the scores to go forward to the freestyle.
Yes, very. So, I mean, so close when you get to that point, Missy, and you just miss out on the final push.
I know. I know, and to be you're exactly right, to be so close. I mean, less than a point, that, you know, you think of it, that's really only a movement, you know, that you could, you know, just, you know, more of a square halt or one more step back or, you know, anything little like that, and that certainly makes a difference for you. But they, you know, both of them, I thought, you know, were really great. You know, again, they're both quite young, so... both Annie and Sydney did a great job in controlling their emotions as well, you know, and being able to go in the ring, because that's impressive, you know, to go down the center line at the Paralympics with, you know, there were a bunch of people that came to watch. And I think we probably, in a way, didn't have as many because it was so hot, you know, and the stands didn't have much shade. So as the days got cooler, we had more spectators. So... as it went on, especially going forward to the freestyle, the days were much cooler, so we had more people that came to watch, which was fun to hear all the crowds cheering.
Yeah, a wonderful experience,
you know,
for them, of course, Missy. I mean, tremendous experience at international level, because the level is ever rising. The bar is rising constantly in the Paras, as we know, but now they have wonderful team experience both, you know, from WEG and from the Paralympics as well. So let's go back to one of the other season pros there, Becky Hart, then coming with the Romani again in her individual championship.
Yep, absolutely. She, you know, she went in there and again, rode a very, very forward, powerful test, but and she had, once again, just beautiful walk work. Just she's got some half circles in the beginning of the test, and they were just a little bit unsteady, I think, in her mind of wanting to ride such a forward, beautiful trot. She just couldn't quite, you know, with Becca's weaknesses in her own body, I think it was just a little bit more difficult for her to really keep that steadiness. So she got some low scores there, but then her walk work was beautiful and brought her back up, but just not quite high enough. You know, they weren't really going to give us that 70, which was unfortunate because she certainly deserved it. So her score was, you know, a bit lower than, again, we thought she would be.
A 67, then finishing in ninth for Becky.
In ninth, yep. And again, her like her medium trots weren't as expressive as they could be. You know, I think in her energy kind of pushing throughout the test, then when she got to those medium trots, the mare just wasn't quite enough on her aids to really get that lovely extension that she has. But she still, you know, with her scores from the 2 days combined, she made it to the freestyle. So we're very happy to have at least one rider go forward into the freestyle.
Absolutely. Well, let's just mention Roxanne Trunnell's performance there with Royal Dancer in the individual championship. A 69.56 for her. 5.56 finishing in 10th place. Again, wonderful championship experience for her, Missy.
Yeah, absolutely. She was great. She rides a very accurate test, and that horse just has nice natural uphill energy, and the judges loved him. But again, you know, we really wanted that 70, but she didn't quite get it. But she did a great job, you know, accurate in her test, and she kept the energy level the same throughout, and it was nice. She did a great job.
Let's go through then to the freestyle and talk about those individual freestyle performances, Missy, and also how the horses were handling the competition and their, you know, fatigue level as well going into the final day. Was it catching up with them in the heat at all?
Not so bad, because we lucked out. You know, our hottest days were Tuesday and Wednesday. We were up in the high 90s, and then it started to cool down a little bit. So by Friday, it was actually quite a bit cooler, and there was a nice breeze. So I think that helped all the horses for the freestyle on Friday, whereas I think, you know, had the heat continued, definitely you would have seen more of the fatigue in the horses and in the riders. But, you know, by then it was just in the 70s, and it was actually quite nice for us. So they were some good performance. There was... The problem, too, though, is that there were a couple afternoons that got a little breezy. So, you know, the decorations around the arena were quite beautiful, but they were flowers, so they all started moving. and it definitely caught, you know, the attention of a couple of the horses. So we had some spooky moments, you know, with the consistency in the ride. So, and that was a bit of what happened to Romani. With Becca Hart on her freestyle, is that the horse in the corner, the bushes were really fairly busy, and you know the mare got a bit spooky to it. So her freestyle didn't start out the way she wanted, but she, you know, was being the competitor that Becca is, was able to get back on her music and get in all of her required movements. And did a great job to catch up and really put in a good performance. But unfortunately, because of that disobedience in the beginning, you know, her marks at the end are going to be a bit low. So that's why she was only on a 67. So that was disappointing, because she has a beautiful freestyle. But you know, it happens. It happens. They're horses, and it's a very, you know, different environment from what we compete at here in the States. And, you know, and overall, you just, it's hard to prepare for it without actually ever being in it.
Absolutely.
But overall, I thought, you know, all of our riders really rode very well. I was very pleased, even though their scores aren't, you know, as high as we would have liked. I do believe that they all rode good, solid tests, and were definitely, you know, they did a great job. They did a great job.
And on the team, of course, we had Annie, Sydney, Becky, and Margaret on that team, finishing, I'm sure, a little bit lower down the order than they would have hoped. But if you assess really now what those biggest takeaways from their team experience as well as their individual performances, Missy, and what we've taken from these Paralympics, how would you characterize that?
Well, I think it was a good team. They all went into the ring to do the best job. And that was great to see, you know, and they stuck together and they cheered each other on and they were very, very supportive towards each of the riders. And really stuck together as a team, which I was really pleased with. You know, yeah, unfortunately we didn't, you know, score as high as we wanted to. And even as the scores were low, the camaraderie between them all stayed high. You know, they didn't come out of the ring, you know, yes, they were disappointed, but they didn't come out of the ring and, you know, get all upset to the others and say, oh, why are we here? You know, you didn't get any of that. They were really very good, at keeping the adrenaline going for each, you know, for whoever was next to go in the ring. They were very supportive too. So, I was pleased again with that because it certainly could have been a bit of more disappointing, you know, for them to not, you know, get the scores that they wanted. But overall, they were really great athletes.
Well, a wonderful experience, as you say, all together, being a part of a team as well, and learning from the standard that now is in the Paralympic Games, because there were some pretty impressive performances, you know, notably, of course, from the Brits and the Germans, those medal winners, really impressive performances at all levels, at all of the grades, Missy. So it does set the standard for what we need to do here in the States in the Paralympic, for the next Paralympics, for the next World Equestrian Games. How would you summarize that?
Well, I think, you know, we've got a good look now of what the Europeans have. And the bar has certainly been raised, and we, you know, need to strive towards that. We need to get, you know, these riders still out there and competing and on good solid horses that they can, ride well, and show well with. You know, I think too, as much as we can get to Europe and compete amongst the Europeans, the better. And we just always strive towards having that international experience amongst the top athletes. So, you know, we did see some really beautiful horses and good rides. And, you know, we learn from it each time.
Absolutely. And I'm hoping and guessing that the horses all arrived back home safely. Long journey, as you said, it's quite a trip for them down there. But they're all back home safely, probably enjoying some rest and grass this time.
Yes. Yep, they did. They just got out of quarantine on Sunday. And actually, Rio just arrived today at noon. So I think they all are going to be very happy to get some turnout time.
For sure. Yeah. Well, Missy, a wonderful experience. Lots of memories, I'm sure, taken from Rio and from for another Paralympics for you. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the program and sharing your review of the Paralympic Games and the American performances. Appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yvonne Bartow joins us now to talk about her recently published book, The Dressage Horse Manifesto, Training Secrets, Insight, and Revelations from 10 Dressage Horses. Yvonne, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm a horse trainer, but I'm also an instructor. And for me, we have so many kids that come through wanting to be trainers or just people wanting to learn to ride better. And some people look at it from the horse's point of view too much and some not enough. And so I try to tell the kids that ride with me, if your horse that you just had your lesson on, if it had to go home and tell its friends or family about what kind of ride it had today, what would it say? What would it say about the way that you rode? Were you fair? Were you diplomatic? Did you ask the horse things that you knew he could do? And I think for some people, it's extremely enlightening for them to have a look and say, wow, like what could is the horse thinking? And not in a silly way, if you would, but in a realistic way that you truly have empathy for the horse that you're riding.
Absolutely. Well, this book, as we should point out, is published by Trafalgar Square Books, available in the USDF bookstore. Now, this is a title that you've broken down into 10 segments, I believe, 10 episodes, which are then broken down to really unpack this in some detail, Yvonne.
Yes, I wanted to go through the levels, and I wanted to use different horses to go through the levels, because certain horses, based on their natural skills, their intelligence, their training, and of course their personalities, might look at things a little bit differently or receive the training that we give them in a different way. And so I tried to have a few different voices, if you would, of horses, not only for the levels, but also for their perspective. You know, a horse might, an aloof horse, for example, that doesn't pay attention very much, needs a little bit of different riding than a social horse who's interested in everything. And a fearful horse is different than a challenging horse. And so they might have a different perspective when they go to a new place, go to a new show, have a new rider, something like that. So I tried to go level by level, but horse, you know, introduce the horse a little bit as an individual, and then their particulars, whether they are stiff in a certain way, or they don't pay attention, or they get distracted easily, and then how that horse might have the best chance of being trained at that particular level, and then also exercises for each level that might help if you didn't understand how to put a lead change on a horse, for example. There's all kinds of ways to approach it, and somewhat sympathetically to the horse's situation. Did the horse already learn changes and you don't know them yet, or does the horse not know changes and you have to learn together? There's exercises and there's kind of setups and scenarios for all of those sort of situations in certain chapters.
Was there a basic philosophy for this then, Yvonne, that was the premise for this book and why you wanted to break it down to such detail?
Because I think a lot of people get stuck either with their horse or just themselves as a rider, training first, maybe getting into second level, and they don't realize that the FEI is not some holy grail that only a few people can touch or can have. It really isn't. I mean, if a horse can learn and listen and have a conversation with you, meaning your aids become independent and separate, and you can get feedback, proper feedback from the horse, then if your horse is capable of going up the levels, you can go with him. If you can put the time in, I have trained an Ackle Techie all the way to Grand Prix, and an Arabian horse, and certain crosses, a Morgan, and I'm working on a Thoroughbred right now off the racetrack. And so I think that so many people say, oh, I don't have the horse flash, or my horse doesn't have enough training, not realizing that, you know, the most fun you can have is to take the journey with your horse, go with him, and see where you can go. And for some people, when they think of FEI, it just seems like it's so far away, and I'm trying to break that barrier and let people think it's not so far away. And you could, you know, with some help, of course, you need some help, but you could really figure out how to get you and your horse up to levels.
For people that are buying this book, then, Yvonne, how would you like them to approach it? I mean, because it does take you, as you said, through the levels. What is the best way to digest this? I'm sure you want people to take away certain components from this book, but what kind of approach to this and what their expectations could be? Give us an idea of what you as the author had in mind.
Well, me as the author, and also some of the feedback I've gotten from predominantly adult amateurs, they have said that they had the best luck when they just read it through, even if they didn't understand it, and they just read it through and absorbed some of the language and how I change from horse to horse, and just read it like a big story. And then they went back and said, okay, now where am I in here? Where am I and where is my horse? And they might start then being more particular at a certain level. Or I found a couple that went back and said, actually, like there was a lot of things at training in first level that you know, seem to be quite important to you and to these horses, and I didn't think they were important enough. And so that probably would be what might stop them from moving on. So they would actually go back down a level from where they thought they were and jump in and work on a few of the exercises there and then go on. But I kind of think it's a, my writing style is not very complicated, and I've read every dressage book out there. I have a very good library, and I've learned as much as I could from books. And so I do appreciate gathering knowledge from a book, but I'm not, the way that I talk, the way that I write is just about the same way I teach a lesson. So it's pretty conversational, and it's not very hard to digest, I don't think. I just think sometimes people would have to really look. I break down the exercises into the steps and what the horse would need to know prior to even starting that exercises, and then what skills or requirements you have to have as a rider in order to implement or execute them. But it's not that complicated, I would have to say that.
Well, let's just recap then the chapters that you have highlighted here. Dressage terms is where you begin from our point of view. Rider responsibility, let the riding begin. Training level, first level, second level, third level, fourth level, the FEI junior and young riders, and then your conclusion. And if you were to sum this up in a conclusion, Yvonne, what would that be?
I would imagine that the conclusion would be that I just want people to look at things a little bit differently than maybe they might have otherwise. And if they're looking at it from the horse's point of view or trying to take into account the horse's point of view for this, then I think that it's important that they just open or broaden their perspective a little bit and say, how would a horse look at his rider and his training process? And if you take that into account as a rider and not say, oh, well, I'm an amateur, so you know I don't have to necessarily have that responsibility. If you are the one sitting on the back of the horse saying you are his trainer at that time, and I think if everybody understood that if you climb up on the back of the horse, in the horse's mind, you're his trainer. Even if the trainer is sitting somewhere telling you something, or if they're not even on property, you're the trainer. And that's probably the biggest message that I want to get across.
Fabulous. And that again is the Dressage Horse Manifesto, Training Secrets, Insight, and Revelations from 10 Dressage Horses by Yvonne Bartow, and the foreword by Hilda Gurney too, Yvonne.
Yes, and I was really happy that she decided to write that for me, and it was a nice foreword. I was surprised about that too. It sounded like she actually did read the book and that she did like the book, and so I was impressed and happy that she took the time. I'm a great fan of Hilda Gurney's, and I always have been, and so I do feel like that was a bonus for me.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on the program and telling us about this book. Yvonne, we really appreciate it. Again, it's available in the USDF bookstore. Yvonne, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
And you can preview a chapter of the Dressage Horse Manifesto by visiting eTrack at usdf.org. Trafalgar Square Books, the publishers, generously provided a sample chapter on basics and rider position to share with USDF members. And USDF members also get a 10% discount on this book and other items carried in the USDF store. And there will be a direct link in the show notes accompanying this episode. And in our final segment this week, we have an excerpt from the 2015 USDF Sport Horse Prospect Development Forum, presented by Dressage at Devon, the USDF education partner, in which Scott Hassler and Willie Arts talk about their philosophy on training young horses.
Good morning, everyone. I'd just like to say, echo what Kathy said, thanks to Julie Shannon, thanks to USDF and the program, and it's just great to see so many people out interested in the proper foundation and development of three-year-olds. The whole goal behind the program was to feed the pipeline, as we're calling it in the States, where we didn't have a program or any knowledge going out there publicly to where we feed, let's say, the USDF 4, 5, and 6-year-old program. And that was the whole intention behind this program, this format, this symposium, is to demonstrate and showcase three-year-olds, putting in confidence and good foundations to get them mature and lead them up to the four-year-olds. And, you know, let's keep in mind that our main goal here is not to build Rome in a day. Our main goal here is to give horses a good experience and try to showcase from the horses that we've selected different things to work on with the horses. So anyway, let's hope we have a great day. All horses have a good experience. You never know with three-year-olds. And I'll hand it over to Willie.
Good morning. Thank you, Scott. And Yeah, I'm honored to be here, to be part of the program, and look forward to working with the horses. And I think we all know that the time from 3 till 5, but for sure is from 3 to 4, is a very important part of any young horse. Yeah, and the development, the way the horse gets started, the way the horse learns to accept a bit, and the basic training will have a great influence on the future of the horse. So what we like to work on during this time is working on where a three-year-old and the goals and the things we like to see. Yeah, first and most of all, it's important that we have a horse that learns to relax, a horse that has confidence in the rider. Yeah, and I think what's most important, that the horse learns to travel over 4 legs and wants to reach to the contact and accept the contact, accept the rider, and then the leg aids. We will start working on, and what we all saw is that the horse looks a little bit, but where I think we could work on is a little bit more towards the connection, and that the horse wants to stretch a little bit more forward into the bit. Yeah, he needs to learn just to carry himself more. Yeah. So we start in the walk or both directions. Yeah, we see here a nice big free walk, nice relaxed. Yeah, and that's what is important, that when we see the walk like this on the free rein, that we can maintain that when we pick up the rein. So that when we pick up the reins, the horse doesn't change, the walk doesn't change. Yeah. If that is the case, then a lot of times the walk is a very difficult gait, especially by a young horse, to work on. So then I always think that it's better to start trotting and start working on the connection issue in the trot and in the canter, and then later on when the horse is worked a little bit more, you go back and you can maybe address it in the walk. But in the beginning you try to then maybe pick up the trot a little bit faster. Yeah. So sometimes the walk is not stays all the way the same, but it's an issue that I would address a little bit more into the ride. But I like to watch a little bit the trot, and then in the trot, we see here that the horse, yeah, also in the trot, then could have a little bit more swing over the back towards the bit. Yeah, so for a horse like this, I like to work on a little bit more changes of tempo. And during that time, the horse learns to start from the leg, react on your leg, and from the leg, the horse learns to stretch into the bit. Yeah, the horse should get lighter in the bridle because the horse wants to carry himself and follows the hand of the rider. Not that the horse gets lighter because the horse drops a little bit the contact. Yeah, so it's always better if the horse maybe sometimes is a little bit too much, takes the hands. You always try to feel if a horse is a little bit uneven, maybe in both reins, that you want to build up contact on the side the horse is a little bit lighter. So you don't work on trying to make the horse lighter on the side he's a little stronger. So in this case, try to keep your right hand forward, let him take the left hand rein. And every time you feel that the horse wants to follow your left hand, you give the left rein. And then when the horse follows the left rein, you automatically get the bending right. And at this time of his training, if he comes maybe a little bit overhand, it's not bad. Yeah, especially in the beginning. Yeah, I rather see him learn to stretch and follow the hand than when he is too open and he is maybe in front of the vertical, but the horse is not working over the back. So now when you feel that the horse starts to relax, starts to follow your hand, then try to introduce a few more changes of tempo. And only with your upper body, you just slow him down a little bit, try to keep going again. So that the horse learns, carry, swing more to the back. And going forward, it's not important how fast he goes and how much. Yeah, sometimes if you have a little bit of horse that is maybe not as sensitive, you can do that a little bit more. But by this one, it's more that you want him to start and maintain the same rhythm, and not that you go make him go too fast. So you want to just keep the relaxation. This work, and pretty soon where the horse goes down, should also really help in the walk. Yeah, the walk is very hard to develop this, because the walk is a gait with no suspension. The walk is also a gait wherein the horse naturally makes a lot more movement with his head and neck, so it's very hard to establish that contact. So to establish the connection with the mouth of the horse is much easier to do in the trot. Yeah, the trot is more to experiment, to work, to train, and the walk is more to check, okay, is my work in the trot been very good? Yeah. And then you see if the walk is correct. Very crucial at this point here is that you have this use of the top line, the use of the neck. There, when he pulls his nose forward, you should be happy with that he does that. That gives you an opportunity to ride, and then you have influence on the horse. The rhythm slows down, and the horse goes with his neck forward towards the bit, and the horse takes and accepts the contact. So that gives you as a rider the opportunity to correct the horse, to have influence on the horse from behind, and then the rest comes by itself. Yeah, but if you in the walk sit and drive and nothing happens, then it becomes harder, and then you start driving harder, and then a lot of times the walk can get irregular because it is a forebeat. Yeah, so but you just need to feel that the horse says, okay, I'm marching towards the bit. So now you have control over the neck, control over the tempo, and you're starting to get influence on the hind legs. You feel you can use your leg, the horse doesn't run off. See, and that's important, that the walk becomes quiet, relaxed, and that the horse, the walk is even, and that you have access to his hind leg. And if you pick up the reins and you feel a little bit uneven, or you feel you right away use your leg, but then ask for a few trot steps. It is better to use your leg the way you want to use it, and then if the horse doesn't respond, just give him a little bit of guidance with the whip. So you just squeeze with your leg as a proper aid for the transition, and if you don't feel the horse responds, it's better to help him with a little bit with the whip than that you just use your leg stronger. Yeah, the whip is then a tool to get the horse's attention. See, and when the horse wants to slow down by himself and you feel that the rhythm in the trot slows down, that is the sign of relaxation. That's the sign of that the horse accepts the contact, the horse stretches forward towards the bit, and that's the moment you can have influence and access to the hind legs. So the question was if the horse has a very active hind leg, and it was a nice forward-thinking horse, but if you had a horse that had naturally a little bit of slower hind leg and maybe was not as much forward-thinking, if you would also slow him down so much, and that is not. If you have a horse that is a little bit naturally a little bit slower, then you maybe doesn't mean you have to go faster, but you ask for quicker reactions. And instead of slowing the horse down, you just ask him to respond faster to the leg. But going faster in tempo is not always that the horse gets more active behind. Because then the horse runs faster. By the time you slow him down, he's still lazy. So it still boils down to the reaction on your leg, and that the horse responds immediately after leg. So it's not always the tempo. But I would do a little bit more forward.
And the USDF is pleased to announce that Scott Hassler and Willie Arts will be the presenters again at this year's USDF Sport Horse Prospect Development Forum, which will be held October 22nd and 23rd at Pineland Farms in New Gloucester, Maine. Auditor pre-registration closes on October 7th, and we will put a direct link again in the show notes accompanying this episode. And finally, a reminder that the 2016 competition year ends on September 30th, just later this week. So don't forget to check your scores. And if you notice an error, contact the USDF Competitions Department. All scores corrections must be reported to the USDF by October 15th, 2016 at 5 p.m. Eastern. In order for a rider award to be recognized in the competition year, the rider award application must be received by September 30th, 2016. Late applications will be accepted until October 15th with payment of the applicable late fee. And if you have any questions regarding this, please email rideawards@usdf.org. That's it for this week's episode. If you'd like to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or any podcast app, you can download it to any mobile device. To keep up with the latest news and alerts on social media, please follow us on Facebook, where we will announce any new episodes as they become available. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.